Welcome to the Love of Books podcast show featuring Indian small press authors with host author Emma Polova. I would like to thank our sponsors, Doc Chavent and Australian romance author Jennifer Rains. Today, I will be chatting with author Tim Doppel, who will announce the details of his book giveaway of The Wind That Did Not Blow. At the end of the interview, Tim Doppel is a part-time author, as comfortable at the keyboard as he's working in his landscape. He's the author of 101 Ways to Romance Your Spouse, and his weekly blog, An Everyday Evangelist, reflects his insights and perspectives on various aspects of life, faith, and community engagement. Hello, Tim. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Welcome. Can you give us a brief summary of The Wind That Did Not Blow?
The Wind That Did Not Blow tells the story of three total strangers during the time of Christ, a Roman, a Cyrenian, and a Judean woman, and in ways that they do not expect, they each encounter each other and end up in Jerusalem on the morning of the very first Pentecost, and their lives are changed as a result of their interactions and what they experience on Pentecost morning.
Okay, so what inspired you to write this?
Oh, yes. It was on Pentecost Sunday in 2021.
Okay.
And I was sitting in church and heard the very familiar reading from Acts of the Apostles that tells the story of the very first Pentecost. And the way my crazy imagination goes is I always hear the readings a little differently depending on what mood I'm in, how hungry I am, the weather outside, whatever the case might be. But you never hear a reading twice the same. And
never.
This particular Sunday, as I'm listening to it, a couple of things jumped out at me that I really hadn't paid attention to before. And one was that it says right in the reading, the many people in the upper room. And I thought, wait a minute. I thought it was just the 12 disciples and a couple of women. What do you mean the many people in the room?
Right.
And so I thought, well, that's interesting. And then they was talking about the many thousands of people who were gathered in the square below the upper room. And I thought to myself, well, how did they know to be there? What drew them to be there and to listen to Peter proclaim the good news? And I talked to one of my priests afterwards, and I was telling him, I said, yeah, I got this crazy idea. As maybe I should write a book. And he looked right at me and he said, then do it. And I was like, okay, I guess I will. And, a few slow starts and restarts, but just kept working on it and got a lot of good encouragement and ended up with being the book as it is today.
Awesome. How long did it take you to write it, to get it published?
It probably took a good 18 to 24 months. I didn't start right away. And then when I did start, there were a couple times I just set it aside for a little while. So really, I've been mulling about it for almost 3 years, but really worked on it hard for about two.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. What was the biggest challenge in writing this book?
My biggest challenge was I am someone who likes lots of detail and lots of information. And so when I first started writing this, I started adding all kinds of what I felt were absolutely fascinating facts about what the Sea of Galilee is like and why it has storms and all this kind of trivia. Mm-hmm. And the editor that I hired, you know, she says, you know, that's all very good and well, Tim, but nobody else cares. And so I had.
typical for all the editors in this world.
Yeah, you know, but in all honesty, she was right.
She was right.
And and that was probably one of the best things it was the best thing I did was to hire an editor and to make this actually worthy, because had I not done that, I probably still would have published the book, but it would not have been very good.
I agree. We need editors. We need excellent editors.
We need excellent editors. You're exactly right.
Okay. What was the most gratifying part in writing this?
That is happening as we speak. It's the reaction of people who do read it, who are excited about it. I'm constantly humbled and pleased to get feedback from some people I know, some people I don't know who read this.
Sure.
And I think, you know, some of them are reading it, you know, to be polite, you know, okay, well, Tim wrote a book, we'll read it for him, you know. But then they're coming back to me saying, you know, hey, this is pretty good. And they're sharing it with friends and coworkers. And that's making me feel very validated, very humbled, and very, very happy.
That's pretty incredible. How about any surprises, discoveries, or epiphanies while writing this book?
Probably the biggest surprise was how do I say this? How easy it came when I would sit down to write. The ideas just came out of me. I would just write this stuff down, you know, type it all out, and it was there. It needed tweaking and it needed editing and, you know,
sure,
lots and lots of spell checking. But I was, you know, I really thought this was going to be work. I really thought that this was going to be painful. You know, like, okay, I got to come up with something else to write. And that's not what happened. It really sort of flowed very, very nicely. And that made me more excited to write more. But I was not expecting it to be quite like that.
What would you attribute it to? Because I get a different response when I ask this question. Mm-hmm. Do you feel there was something else behind your, not just inspiration, but behind the great flow of the story?
I am a person of faith. Mm-hmm. I believe in the goodness of God.
Yep.
And I genuinely believe that the Holy Spirit was kicking me in the rear and saying, yep, write this. This needs to be told.
Yep.
And so I really attribute the ease that the words came out of me to the influence of the Holy Spirit.
Sure. What do you feel you did right? No one else could have done it like you.
Oh, you know, I don't know that I would say that no one else could have done it like me, but I did a lot of research. I wanted this to be historically as accurate as I possibly could make it. I wanted this to evoke the land that Israel is. I was fortunate enough when I was in college to spend 10 weeks in Israel.
Oh, that helped, right?
Yeah, it does. It does, definitely helps. So I know what the land looks like. I know what the city of Jerusalem looks like. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to try and be sure to convey that in the writing. And so I did a lot of research on, you know, when the one character, the Roman Cadmus, travels from Rome to Alexandria, Egypt on his ship. I wanted to know, okay, at that time in history, how long would that trip have taken? I didn't want to, you know, just take a guess. I wanted it to be accurate. And so, you know, I found sites and information that helped me calculate that. So a lot of research really needs to go into any kind of historical fiction, I believe.
Yes.
But when you're writing Christian fiction, I think you need to be really careful, because everybody either knows the story or thinks they know the story. And so you got to be careful not to get too far out of the box.
Yeah. What would you have done differently now, looking at it from a perspective?
I probably would have moved a little faster.
Faster? Okay.
Seeing how the people who have read it have enjoyed it, I wouldn't have doubted. I would not have said, maybe I just, write this and then put it on the bookshelf and say, okay, Tim, you wrote your book, and forget about it. Instead, my wife and a few others, my editor, encouraged me that it was worthy, and to get it out there. I should have had a little more faith. I should have had a little more confidence, and moved along and not sat on it for quite as long as I did.
Yeah. What have you learned about yourself from writing The Wind That Did Not Blow?
I've always been very proud of my writing skills, but I really believe this helped take it to a new level. I've learned a lot about how to write. I enjoy it. It's really a good thing.
It's a good thing, yeah. It's good for our minds, yes. What are some of the takeaways from The Wind That Did Not Blow? I like the title.
Thank you. And that's kind of the hook, if you will. How did the people get to the courtyard? Well, the title may give you a hint, but the takeaways are that it doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter if you are a terrorist assassin who is coming to Rome to wreak havoc, or it doesn't matter if you are a wealthy Roman businessman who is coming to Judea to find out why he thinks he's being stolen from, and to call his manager to account. It doesn't matter if you are a businesswoman who has to take care of her children, and who is wondering why her husband isn't around more. Doesn't matter what your background is. When you encounter the Spirit of God, your life will be changed. And it will be changed for the better.
For the better. Always for the better. Would you do it all over again, your writing career?
Oh, I would. Absolutely. Before I wrote this is my first novel. Before this, I've always written stuff, whether it's for church, whether it was for business. I enjoy writing and sharing my opinions and my ideas in writing. I suppose in the long arc of things, this was just sort of an inevitability that at some point I was going to have to write a book. It's just been fun to see how it all develops. And it certainly has my mind going for other things as well, obviously.
I can expect that. What is the most interesting or bizarre thing that has ever happened to you during an in-person author's event?
Well, I guess I have to be honest and say I haven't had one.
You haven't had any. Well, that's all right.
I'm expecting a shipment of books in here any moment. I was told they're on their way, so I'm expecting them to arrive soon. And then I'm going to be working on getting some in-person events lined up. So I'll let you know what kind of wackadoodle stuff happens after I get a few lined up.
Yeah. When did you publish the book? When did it get published?
It was officially launched at the end of January.
Okay. Well, that's brand new. Yes.
Yeah. It's so I'm still trying to get some traction. But it's starting to get out. I got an email from someone today commenting on how they were talking with four or five people who have read the book and who are going to be sharing with friends. So the word is starting to get out, and I'm confident.
What's next for Tim on your writing journey?
I have two very different projects in mind. I on my website, timdbooks.com, I say right on the homepage, I'm an eclectic writer. I like writing all sorts of things. Although historical fiction is certainly my go-to. I want to write a story about a young boy who enlists in the American Civil War as a drummer boy and follows the army across the land, and all of the things that he encounters and how his life is changed by that experience and how he relates to other people. So that's one thing. Again, I'm a huge Civil War fan, buff. Mm-hmm. I know all sorts of totally useless trivia about the American Civil War, but that's one project I have in mind. And the other project came to mind just actually last week. We were babysitting two of our grandchildren, and at bedtime, it's become a tradition that I tell a very brief little bedtime story to them. It was suggested that I start to compile these and put it into a children's book, which I've never done before. So that's going to be a whole new experience. But yeah. we may be coming up with a children's bedtime storybook.
That's exciting.
You never know.
You never know, right?
That's right.
Would you like to read to us?
Oh, I would love to. Thank you. These chapters occur in the middle of the book, and Michaela is the Judean woman business person who is a potter, and mm-hmm. Michaela's husband Tavi is off being a follower of the Rabbi Jesus, and he's been gone from home for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so this chapter begins in the pottery shed in Michaela's hometown of Lydda.
Okay, go for it.
The potter's wheel groaned and creaked as Michaela kicked the flywheel once more to build up speed on the wheel head. Her potter's wheel had originally been her Ema's. Its stone kick wheel was worn from years and years of being pushed by their feet. The buildup of animal fat allowed the wheel to turn freely once Michaela had pushed it enough times in order to birth her pottery creations. Even with the accumulation of animal grease and her vast experience, Michaela grunted as she pushed the heavy kick wheel with her feet and simultaneously grabbed at the wheel head to increase the speed of the wheel. If the wheel turned too slowly, the pottery would not expand under the pressure of her hands. If the wheel was spinning too fast, it was likely that the clay would slip right off the wheel's head and flip onto the ground. "As many times as I have made this wheel spin, it does not seem to get any easier," Michaela thought to herself. A bleating sound made her look up and smile. A goat was standing there looking at Michaela, chewing a piece of straw that was hanging from its mouth. "Well, shalom, my little friend. I welcome your company today. Perhaps you can tell me the news from town, or what has been happening in Jerusalem over the past month since I was last there." The goat continued to munch on the straw and stare at Michaela. "Ah, yes, you haven't left the farm either, now have you?" said Michaela. "It seems that we are all tied to this farm in order to get the work done and keep the children all fed. I do so appreciate the milk you provide. The goat looked up as if it were alarmed at something and let out a loud bleat. Now, now, assured Michaela, have no fear. We have no plans to use you for the next Seder meal. You have bigger brothers who will have that honor. The goat cocked its head to one side as if it seemed to understand what Michaela had said and approved. After double-checking to see if Michaela was only kidding, the goat bent down and grabbed more straw off the floor and continued to watch the potter wheels spin. So what shall be this morning's project, eh? Michaela said aloud. I am bored with all the bowls I've created, so let's do something a little different. A nice chalice for a fine glass of wine should be a delightful change of pace. I'll make it on the larger side so that Tavi can have his fill. Michaela's mood darkened at the thought of Tavi. Where in heaven's name is my husband? She thought. Surely I should have received a letter from him by now. It has been so long since the last one arrived. Michaela took a deep breath and focused on the task at hand. Grabbing a handful of clay from the pot, she kicked the potter's wheel one more time to keep up the speed. With an expertise born of years of experience, she calmly threw the clay onto the wheel head. However, the blob of clay landed off to one side instead of dead center, and in a flash flew off the wheel and onto the ground. Well, that's not helpful, Michaela said to the goat. The boys will have a hard time getting all the dirt and straw out of that pile of clay. Michaela picked up the lump of clay and threw it into the waste bin. Her young sons would be tasked with picking out the pieces of clay and washing out the dirt so that the clay would be used for a future project. The boys did not enjoy the task, but it gave them something to do. Sitting back down at the potter's wheel, Michaela gave several practice kicks, and the wheel spun up once again. Another handful of clay was in her hands, and this time it landed perfectly in the center of the wheel. Much better, she said. Michaela used her hands to hold the clay and begin the process of allowing the clay to form into a smooth shape. She placed her thumbs into the top of the clay ball so that an opening would be created. The shape of a cup was beginning to take form. But then, in a blink of an eye, the burgeoning chalice collapsed into a flopping hunk of mud. What the? Fumed Michaela. I do not have time for this. This is just a simple mug. Michaela stood up and walked around the shed with her hands on her hips. It's a good thing Naomi and my other helper ladies are not here to see me looking like a beginner potter, thought Michaela. They would never let me live it down. All right, then, one more time, said Michaela, looking at the goat. And this time, don't distract me. The goat just stared at her and kept grinding at the straw. Michaela sat back down at her spot and once more kicked the heavy stone to speed up the wheel. She took the lump of clay on the wheel head and, after appraising its worthiness, threw that one into the waste bin with the first. Let's start fresh, she thought to herself. Once more, the wheel spun and creaked and shook as it rotated faster and faster. With little more than a glance, Michaela grabbed another handful of clay. Squeezing the excess moisture out of the ball, she slammed it home on the center of the turning wheel. Again, practiced hands began to shape the ball into a useful form. Whether it was the speed of the wheel or the pressure of the potter's hands, the result was the same. The clay squished up through Michaela's fingers and clung to her fists. I'm tired of this, shouted Michaela. In one smooth motion, she grabbed the ball of mud and threw it at the wall, where it landed with a solid and loud thwap. The goat recoiled from the sound and ran from the shed, bleeding in terror the entire way. "You better run," ranted Michaela. "Here I sit working every day to create pottery, to give you straw to eat, and to make enough money to feed my four children. And where is my husband? Where is the man who's supposed to be caring for the fields and directing the help? Well now, isn't that a good question? The last I heard from him, he was off on some wild adventure, following an itinerant teacher and seemingly enjoying it." Michaela's voice was getting louder by the minute. "But does he ever think of me? Does he ever think of his children? Does he ever think of his farm and business? Apparently not. Otherwise, he would be here. At the very least, he would be sending me a message telling me when he'll be returning. But I hear nothing. Nothing for months on end. I am tired of this. I am tired of doing all the work by myself. I am tired of lugging all the pottery and the children to Jerusalem by myself." Michaela paused. Crumbling onto the straw floor of the potter's shed, Michaela put her face into her muddy hands. Her tears washed the clay off her hands. "I am so tired of being alone. Oh, Tavi, please come home soon."
"Okay, thank you. Can you, Tim, give us the details of your book giveaway of The Wind That Did Not Blow?"
"Oh, I'd be happy to. I'm going to give out my email."
The first listener who emails you with the subject line "Book Podcast Giveaway" will get a signed copy of your either book or ebook. And if you could give us twice your email.
Okay, the email to use is chat, chat, at timdbooks, no spaces, timdbooks, timdbooks.com. So it's chat at timdbooks.com.
Yep, and now parting shots from each one of us. You first, Tim, you're my guest. What do you want to leave our listeners with?
I hope that when you feel something come up from within you, that there is something that you want to talk about and to tell a story, whether you write it down or just tell a friend or tell your children or tell your spouse, tell your story. There are so many wonderful, beautiful stories that we have in our world and we have in our heart, and they do nobody any good if they're not told.
Exactly. They have to be written down. And my parting shots are write indie, buy indie, and read indie. Read your local newspapers for inspiration. Keep your fingers on the keyboard and your butt in the chair. Tell your story. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
All right.